Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Welcome back to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Today in the studio for a second mentoring conversation, we have Scott Welly. Scott is the number one international best-selling author, peak performance strategist, and founder of Outperform the Norm, which trains high achievers and athletes to remove their self-imposed limitations, increase confidence, and accomplish more than they ever thought possible. Scott has worked with professional athletes from the NFL, MLB, PGA Tour, elite-level triathletes, CEOs, stay-at-home moms, and everyday heroes who all had one common goal, to improve and to be better today than they were yesterday. Scott's 8 best-selling books, articles, videos, and online programs inspire hundreds of thousands of people worldwide. He has a master's degree in sports psychology, serves on the executive certification board for Nesta, the advisory board of the Minnesota School of Business Globe University, and the board of directors for the Minnesota Distance Runners Association. He's also a contributor to Personal Trainer magazine and was a featured author in Pure Genius. Welcome back to our program. How are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling great. Thanks a lot for having me back. It's great to be back. I'm psyched.
Good. Yeah, thank you. You're welcome. Well, in our last conversation, you were very open in kind of sharing your personal journeys today as we were both sharing our losses. For us, it's been a guinea pig. And for you, it's been like your mom and also, your dad having some struggles, and your dog passed away too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How long did you have your dog?
I think I had her for 7 or 8 years.
Oh, same time we had our guinea.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, it's hard because you work them totally into your daily routine.
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's nothing like having a dog, but I never grew up with a pet. So I used to honestly look at it, and a lot of my friends would have dogs and things like that, and they would get so attached, and then, you know, the dog has to be put down or passes away, and I never understood how they could get so attached to an animal. And now it's like, okay, I get it, because you know what, whether you've had a good day or whether you've had a bad day, like the dog or whatever animal or pet you have in your life is like your rock. You know,
yeah.
they're there through thick and thin, and they love you regardless. And it's so easy to get attached. And that's why there's just such a hole in your heart when they end up passing away.
Absolutely. Every time I cut up vegetables, you know, I'm already missing the little, she makes these little squeaks. Mm-hmm. Noises, you know, because she's so happy, you know, I'm giving her some vegetables and, you know, just so easy to please, you know, I just love that about her. So did you grow up in Albany?
I did.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Born and raised. Yeah. Albany, Minnesota, population 1701. So so it's small town through and through.
So how big was your high school class?
It was just over 100.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You knew everybody. You knew everyone for better or for worse when you grow up in a small town like that.
Right.
You sneeze and everyone knows it. So there are definitely pros and cons. But I absolutely loved growing up there. Loved small town. Still go back to see my dad. And it was fun.
I grew up in Parker's Prairie. So it's by Alexandria.
Uh-huh.
So, I had like 79 in my high school graduating class.
All right.
You can
relate to what I'm saying.
Totally. Yeah. And I love that neck of the woods too. You know, a lot of dairy farmers.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's good salt of the earth people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good hearty Minnesotans.
That's right. And you've got a brother that you do marathons with.
Mm-hmm.
And your last one was in Italy that you performed together.
In Rome.
Mm-hmm. And you do triathlons.
I do.
So tell me how you prepare for that. Like I just had a guest on recently, and she's competing in the Ironman coming mm-hmm. up, and she was saying like she's been training for a year, mm-hmm. and the month before the Ironman is like her most one, you bump up the training level, but her ability to focus or stay on track really is challenge, mm-hmm. is a challenge for her.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it really depends on, you know, what distance of triathlon we're talking about. And I've done 5 Ironmans, so I know what it's like. And especially if you're talking about Ironman distance, it's a part-time job.
Yeah.
And you know what? I always tell people that when they're asking me, okay, well, I'm contemplating doing this Ironman. I say, all right, well, you've got to be ready for a part-time job, because especially when you get to the point in your program a month or two out from the actual race where you're at the peak training volume,
yeah.
you're probably going to be doing 15 to 20 hours a week of training. And then you think of the residual fatigue that comes from swimming, biking, running, things like that, and how it affects you in kind of your day-to-day life. You just have to go into it knowing that that's going to happen to you. You
yeah.
know, you can't go into it and just be like, well, I want to do this Ironman. It's going to be so much fun. No, it's actually going to be really, really hard. There are going to be a lot of days where you don't want to go out there. You don't want to train. You have to find a way to prioritize it and a way to work it into your schedule. And if you do that, you'll have success. But if you go into it kind of with blinders on, you don't really know what you're getting yourself into, you're going to be in for a rude awakening.
Well, I can't imagine anyone training for a triathlon or an Ironman where they're not working with a coach or a whole team of people. Are people all training together or?
Oh, well, it kind of depends on the individual. And I think you would probably do those for maybe different reasons. Like if you're training with a team or training with other people, it's probably because you really like the social component part of it. And,
okay.
you know, there were a couple of people that I might train with every now and then, but I trained for my Ironmans. A lot of it was on my own, you know, where I wasn't with a large group of people that I was running, biking or swimming with. Just because I don't know, just knowing my personality, I didn't necessarily need that. But from a coaching perspective, I think, and some advice that I give everyone, whether we're talking about just in your entrepreneurial journey or if you have a desire to do a marathon or an Ironman triathlon, is work with a coach.
Yeah.
All the highest performers on the planet have coaches. Well, why wouldn't you? Because it's always nice to have a fresh set of eyes looking on what it is that you're doing, advising you on how to be maximally efficient and effective with your time, and you know, to just provide that motivation and that accountability when you need it.
Yeah.
I think coaches help in all areas of our life.
Yeah, absolutely. And do sports coaches, would you train with some of the people, like go on some of their training with your clients, or is it more behind the scenes?
It's more behind the scenes, and it would be very infrequently that I would actually go out and, you know, I'm going to bike along next to you or I'm going to run along next to you. That would cost a little bit extra if somebody was looking at that, but
right.
It's more along the lines of just properly structuring the running, the biking, the swimming, the things like that, helping people with nutrition, helping people with the mental side of peak performance. And the nice thing about doing that is you can literally do that with people all around the world. Like I've got a Skype call with somebody in Sydney, Australia, 10:30 p.m. tonight, you know,
yeah.
it's just crazy. And I've got another client in Geneva, Switzerland, and another one in Dublin. It's just random
cool.
how people can kind of find you, but you can actually go and you can guide them on some of these things. And especially now with the power of video
yeah.
and things like that, they can actually send you, you know, maybe their running form and you can go ahead and you can tweak it. You don't necessarily have to be right there next to them.
Oh, I see.
Helping
yeah.
them out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very cool. You'd mentioned residual fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
How does a person deal with residual fatigue? Like what happens to them during that time?
Well, what happens is the physical affects the mental. I mean, you just get to a point where you're so physically tired because, and you know, it's again, every athlete is very different. If the person you're referring to has legitimately been training for a year for an Ironman triathlon.
Yeah.
In my estimation, that's way too long. Now, I don't know her background or their background. I don't know what their starting point was, but I don't think I ever trained more than maybe 4 to 6 months, like for any of the Ironmans that I did. But it's all relative to the fitness and the shape that you have going into that training program. But the thing that you need to know is you're just going to get to a point in your training where you're just physically fatigued and physically tired, and that's going to affect your motivation. That's going to affect kind of your desire to want to go out there and do it. And maybe that is a time where you then go and you say, you know what, I know I need some added accountability and motivation. So whether that's from a coach or whether that's from a training group that, you know, like, okay, I'm meeting this group to run at 6 a.m., you know, or meeting this group to swim over my lunch hour in this master swim class, whatever it might be, that's where you sometimes can rely on other people to help pull you through those things. And just know to keep your eye on the prize. Know that, look, it will get better. If you can get through the spot that you're at right now, and I've found that sometimes going and looking at actually charting the number of workouts, because chances are if you're feeling like that, you're probably pretty close to the race where you don't have 100 workouts left that you have to complete before you're going to be at the start of Ironman. You know, it might be something like you only have, let's say, 20 workouts. Well, now you go and you physically write down those 20 workouts, and then each time you complete a workout, you write a big X like through that workout, and you're just like, okay, one down, 19 left to go, and then put a big X through the next one, 18 left to go, and you can actually see it, like the end is near, even though it doesn't seem like it's near.
That'll
help you with motivation as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of conditioning. Your latest book is Outperform the Norm. How is it different than your other books?
Well, Outperform the Norm, I would say, is really kind of my mantra or my mission statement for life. It's based around health, happiness, and high performance. Those are the three sections of the book. And it's just my strategies and everything that I've learned on how to live your best life.
Nice. And is it based on all the things that you've also learned along the way, or a lot of research, or...
No, it's not like a PhD thesis or anything like that. It's based on my own personal experiences. And then there's some science behind it, but it's not, it's not hardcore into like the analytical scientific principles and things like that. It's really just what are some simple strategies that you can use that are going to help you have greater health, greater happiness, greater high performance, and whatever it is that you're looking at doing. Because if I look at people that are truly living not only successful and high achieving lives, but also are fulfilled with their life, chances are they have probably a pretty good balance of all three of those things. You know, you can be very healthy, but maybe you're not very happy, or maybe you're not very high performing and productive in your job, or maybe you're extremely successful and high performing professionally, but you're letting the professional affect the personal, and you're really not taking care of yourself, and your health is suffering. You know, you can have one, or you can maybe have two without the other. And I think to live a well-rounded, holistic, fulfilled life, you need all three of them.
Yeah. I'm in total agreement. I'm going to read that book. I read your first book, Wellness, and one great title.
Wellness, play on my last name.
No, I think that's great. But also, I like your style of writing, and it's pretty no-nonsense. It's straightforward. I didn't get lost in like a ton of details, and there were lots of good advice.
Yeah.
And so I imagine your other book is like that too, because it seems to work.
Outperform the Norm is very no-nonsense. It's just like Wellness, if you thought Wellness was a no-nonsense. And honestly, all of my 8 books are written just like that. And I think one of the biggest compliments that I get when people read my books and they sit down and they talk to me like we are right now, or we're having a beer, we're having a cup of coffee, or whatever it might be, is they're like, you know what? Like, you talk just like you write. Like, I feel like I'm reading your book. And that actually makes me feel really good, because, You know, if any of you out there are thinking about writing books, I went through my period of kind of call it writer's block or whatever you want to call it, where I wanted to write books and I wanted to get some of the knowledge and kind of experiences that I've had out there in the world to be able to help people. But I would sit down and I would try and write it. And I thought I had to write it in such a buttoned up kind of like, well, this has to be grammatically correct. And I have to watch my sentence structure and make sure everything is just kind of perfect. And finally, I got over that. And I just said, you know what, I don't care if I end a sentence in a preposition. Like, I'm just going to write this like it'll be okay. I just want to get to the point, and you know, I want it to be short and sweet and concise and something that people will read and they will just say, yeah, you know, that seemed very conversational, and you know, it felt like you were there just speaking to me instead of, again, you're reading kind of this, you know, PhD academic paper or something.
Yeah. No, and it's tips that, you know, really stay with you.
Yeah.
Like 78% of our thoughts every day are negative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In yoga teacher training, mm-hmm. you know, I learned some of that too. Mm-hmm. But you're with it every day, right? Every mm-hmm. position that you're in, mm-hmm. you're sitting in there long enough so you're tracking what's coming in.
Yeah.
And what's going out. Mm-hmm. Or when the self-doubt comes, or, man, you know, I could get into crow pose yesterday. I mean, what is up with me today? You know, kind of thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I like your style of writing. I wanted to go over, because I think that anyone who is into sports and really kind of trying to gather a few more tips about their life and kind of like your conversation that you had in the book. I say a conversation because it felt like a conversation almost.
Good.
Like, you know, I could hear you talking to me, mm-hmm. like you said, mm-hmm. Other people do. But like your take on water.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that that's a really good foundational book that you can build on. And I would suggest having people read that one first before they go on to the others, because it's so insightful. Like the super achieving mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So success conditioning, like you cannot control what happens to you. You can only control how you respond to it. And I think in our last conversation, mm-hmm. We were talking about road rage and, mm-hmm. You know, that you can't control other people. And so detaching from that, or your control. So focusing on 100% effort, mm-hmm. not the outcome. Mm-hmm. And so in yoga, we detach from the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see where like there's subtle little situations where you find like there's almost like a strand reaching out that's attaching to the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, okay, there it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. Right.
I just want to stop that.
Yeah. Well, and again, we outcomes in our life, they can provide motivation. They can provide direction.
Yeah.
Like, you know what, this is the outcome or this is the result that I really want. But at the end of the day, going back to the thoughts and going back to the actions, and I sometimes just say control the controllables. Controlling the controllables as far as your effort, as far as your preparation, as far as your attitude, where those things that we manage, if we can manage those things day in and day out, they will make those outcomes likely inevitable. And I think in so many different areas, if we can detach from those outcomes, we're going to be a lot better off.
Oh, always. Yeah, always. And it's like as entrepreneurs too, sometimes we get so focused on the money because, you know, it's our livelihood.
Yeah.
So we need to have cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like these subtle little things to pay mm-hmm. attention to of like our activities during the day.
Yeah.
Like I say to myself every day, what activities have I done to generate money for today?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And what activities have I done to generate money for tomorrow?
Because
mm-hmm. that helps keep the stress down for me.
Yeah.
And it keeps it right in the moment.
Yeah.
And then I look at my activities. Oh, yeah. Well, no. Is that one for future? And oh, yeah, I need this amount mm-hmm. today.
Yeah.
So it helps me balance out the cash flow.
Yeah. Well, and what you're talking about is, I sometimes say, have a vital few, and don't make the vital few the trivial many. Yeah, everybody listening to this, I'm sure, has a lot of different things that they do every single day. Like, you have a long list of tasks and responsibilities and obligations and things you have to get done, right?
Yeah, right.
But if you're an entrepreneur, you have certain results, you have certain outcomes that you want to achieve. But like what you brought up before, I mean, your revenue generating activities and my revenue generating activities and other people's revenue generating activities are all probably going to be different. But those should be part of our vital few. And if we can go and kind of anchor that back and really think about, you know what, if I just execute on these vital few things, and it's really not a lot, there are usually only just a few things that we need to do every single day.
Right.
And if we get really good and are really disciplined about doing those, we're going to be successful. We are. Those outcomes are going to take care of themselves.
Reminder. Do you feel after every triathlon that you've reached a different level of understanding about yourself?
Yes. And I mean, I ran a 100-mile ultra marathon run too, and that was an entirely different level of understanding. And what people don't always appreciate about things like that, and especially if they've never done a quote unquote endurance type event, is that the longer the event is, the more mental it becomes. So like to run 100 miles, it took me 21 hours and 6 minutes. And I think my longest Ironman was a little bit over 12 hours. So it's a substantially longer event. And you just learn so much about yourself. And I think it has such application for entrepreneurs and what they go through on a day-to-day basis. Because like throughout the course of the race, people were giving up, people were quitting, people were walking, people were saying, you know what, I can't go on, I can't do this, because they're not managing that self-talk throughout it all.
Yeah.
And I think the more times you can kind of come face to face with your own self-doubt or your own demons, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, or your own things that try to get the best of you, and the more that you can overcome that, the more that you can then take those things and you can apply them to your everyday life.
Yeah. I was going through a little bit of that. We're approaching our 100th show.
Mm.
And I like went through this block where I was like, I can't even write another sentence, you know, or I love listening to all the podcasts. So when we're done, Michael edit it, then I'll get it back and then I listen to it and then I write up a little narrative.
Sure.
And then I add mentoring tips so that those who want to move into action with the conversation, they have ways to go about doing that. And I was just hitting this roadblock, like I just can't even do it. Like I can't even get myself to write. And I frankly don't even know how I worked myself through it. Maybe it's just because I knew that that deadline was there and I am not going to disappoint people.
Yeah. It's a powerful thing. And again, everybody's wired differently. All I try and ever do is I give people strategies and you know what? Some of them might really resonate and might be perfect for you. Other ones might be like, well, if I could do that, but that's really kind of jamming a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah.
You know, but I know for me personally speaking, like a 100-mile run or anything, Ironman, whatever it might be. Like you put a finish line out there and you tell me it's 100 miles away or 140.6 in the case of an Ironman, and you start me out, I will make it to that finish line because I just know where it is. I know that I will eventually cross that finish line because I'll just do
what's... So you manage yourself and you do what's necessary?
I will do what's necessary to make it happen. And I also think, you know, relative to, I'm not sure if this exactly fits with what you were saying before, but I also know one of the things about my own personality is when I really don't want to do something, if I can just get started, I will continue to do it and I will finish it. Like if I don't want to clean my condo, I don't focus on, if I look at it and I'm like, man, this place is a pigsty. Like I've got 2 hours of cleaning of this thing right now. I won't think about, you know what, I'm going to be cleaning for the next 2 hours. I will think I need to clean for 5 minutes. And once I just do that and I manage it and I chunk it down to like, well, you can do anything for 5 minutes. And then you start and you just get into the act of doing it. Now it's like, all right, well, I'll just keep doing it. And then before you know it, you've done it all. And, you know, to do like the 100-mile run, that's how I had to look at it. Because thinking about getting to a finish line 100 miles away is really daunting. So I literally just thought about, you just got to get to the next mile. You just got to get to the next mile. And I think it's a great strategy for people as well, because I'm sure there are people listening to this that have very lofty goals, very lofty aspirations.
Yeah.
And those are good. Again, those outcomes provide the motivation and direction. Mm-hmm. But to chunk that down and to just say, okay, well, what's the next thing that I have to cross off the list? Like, what's the next milestone that I have to get to? What's the next mile marker that I have to hit? And if you continue to do that, you'll eventually get there.
Yeah.
You'll get there.
Yeah. And what about your body physically? Have you ever had points where you're wondering, can I even really finish the race?
All the time. Yeah.
Oh, you do.
You get to a point where you talk about what you learn about yourself when you're doing these things. I did a half marathon on Saturday this last weekend. And there's a point in every single race, because I go out there and I might have times that I'm shooting for, again, outcomes that I'm looking at, like I would like to do this time. But for the most part, I'm going out there and I'm just trying to give maximum effort. Like I'm trying to just really try as hard as I can and try to be the best that I can be. But anytime you do a race, whether it's a half marathon, marathon, Ironman, 100 mile, or whatever it is, you will get to a point in the race where every single part of your body wants you to stop. And you just want to slow down and you just want to quit. At least that's what I go through. And I know a lot of other people that I've talked to experience the same thing. And again, that can teach you, I think, a lot about life. Because if you can overcome and if you can use positive self-talk, as simple as it sounds, whatever power word or whatever power phrase, I mean, all of psychology is built around self-talk and what you say to yourselves and managing those negative thoughts. If you can have some type of short cue word or power phrase that you say to yourself when the times really get tough that allow you to push past it, physically speaking, it's never a physical thing that makes you stop. It's always your mind that just says, you know what, I just don't want to do it anymore.
Wow.
You think it's physical, but it's not. Even when you talk about the wall in something like the marathon, people be like, well, there's this wall that you hit around mile 20 or 21 or 22. They've never identified anything with the wall. They've never identified any amount of lactic acid or, you know, muscle breakdown or glycogen depletion or anything else. There's never been any scientific evidence to back up when you should hit the wall and how exactly that works. It's just something that people experience. They think it's physical, but really what it is, it's just the mind saying, I don't want to go through this suffering anymore. Mm. And I want to slow down and I want to walk.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, I've walked races before too. So it happens to me as well. I'm not going to be so arrogant to say that I overcome it every single time, but you try to fight the good fight.
Yeah.
You know?
And
each time that I think you can overcome something like that, it's what I call reference points. It's something that you can go back to and it's something that you can reference. And it doesn't have to be specific to, like, you know, something that I've overcome in a marathon. Doesn't have to just be, well, I've done that in a marathon, so now I can do it in another marathon. It's actually something you can say, I've done this in a marathon, so I know that I can do this professionally, or I know that I can do this in my entrepreneurial journey as well.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't have to be situation specific.
Yeah.
So you use those reference points and those times where you've overcome something when you didn't think you could go on and you didn't think you could do it, and you use that as a source of strength and confidence.
What's your favorite positive affirmation?
I have a couple. I will usually just say, you got this.
Oh.
You've got this.
Nice.
I say to myself all the time, you got this. You got this, Scott.
You got this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Two more things and then we'll call it a wrap.
Okay.
One is, you talk in chapter 2 of the Wellness book, vibrant health starts here, chronically dehydrated world is what you talk about.
Mm-hmm.
That you talk about why dehydration is so important. You know, having a healthy body because we're made up of 66.
Why hydration is so important because we're dehydrated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Go ahead. Okay. Keep going. Yeah.
Right.
Sorry.
And so a healthy body's we're made up of 60 to 70% water. Mm-hmm. Muscles are made of 80% water, mm-hmm. which I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. As little as 1 to 2% difference in dehydration can affect your performance.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And your cognitive function and mm-hmm. your decision making.
Yep.
So do you think during longer term races that also that's part of the factor when people quit? Is that they may be dehydrated, which is causing them to...
Yeah, certainly. I mean, again, it's a complex interaction of things going on at that point.
Okay.
Like, it can very yeah. easily be hydration. It can be an electrolyte imbalance. It can be a lack of calories in general. I'm assuming that when I mentioned the wall and different things like that, I'm assuming that you've got those things dialed in. Like you've been drinking water, Gatorade, Powerade,
oh,
you've got
I
your
see.
Electrolytes
yeah.
up, and you're, you know, you've been taking in enough calories where really at that point, it's just your body is tired, your muscles are tired, and now it's that going against your mind telling you to quit, and it's like, which one's going to win? You know,
yeah.
what's going to win at that point? But as far as the people out there listening, I mean, honestly, one of the single best things that you can do for yourself physically and mentally is to drink more water. It's the starting point for so many people that I talk to. You take your body weight, slash that in half, and drink that number of ounces of water each day. That's the starting point that I usually recommend for most people.
I really like that instead of the generic 8 ounces.
Right. Exactly.
Eight glasses, or whatever.
Especially in the book, I talk about you look at the things that are diuretics. Diuretic being something that pulls water out of your body. So if you're a big coffee drinker, if you're just a big caffeine drinker in general, that's going to diuretic. Not that it's horrible, but it's just going to pull water out of your body. Alcohol, diuretic, going to pull water out of your body. If you live at altitude, it's going to be drier up there and hot, humid climates, you know, same sort of thing. You're going to be losing more water. But I mean, I know this from my own personal experience, and I also know it from so many different people that I've seen. If you can condition yourself to drink more water, like at least half of your body weight in ounces of water each day, you will never feel better physically from an energy and from a stamina standpoint. You will never be clearer mentally and have better cognitive function and alertness. You'll probably end up eating a little bit less because most people mistake thirst for hunger. Your skin will be better because you're hydrated, because it smooths out wrinkles, which a lot of people like that. it just has so many good benefits,
yeah.
really.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of people have dysfunctional relationships with food. And mm-hmm. so you talk about having a relationship, and that if you look at like an 80-20% rule regarding 80% is the time in which you're eating really healthy food
mm-hmm.
and allow yourself some 20%
mm-hmm.
Where you just totally like eat, you know, just blow your diet,
mm-hmm.
however
yeah.
you eating.
Yeah.
And then you break it down even further to say, you know, if you're eating 5 meals a day, you can blow like one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, we really could be here all day talking about this one. And I do have another book out there called Metabolism Myths that
okay.
is basically my anti-dieting book because I
nice.
Hate the word diet.
Yeah, me too.
I don't like the way that our country emphasizes diets and all or nothing, black or white, like you're either on it or off it type of, you know, dieting in general. And
yeah.
the best diet, and it'll be the last time that I use that word because I really look at it as a lifestyle. I mean, the best that is a good lifestyle. Like it really is, and is a good relationship with food. And I'm always just struck where, you know, we led this off talking about, you know, how I ran the marathon in Rome with my brother. And I'm always struck when I go to Europe or I go to another country and I think about when I was in Italy. I mean, I think we had pizza for breakfast, and it's a different type of pizza there, but we had pizza for breakfast probably 4 of the mornings that I was there. We had pasta every single day, and you have your fill of wine and some other things, but portions sizes are a lot smaller, food is a lot fresher. And I think I came back from that and I'd actually lost weight. you know, in the time that I was there. And I think about how different that is than when I come back here and people are like, well, you need to be low carb, you need to be paleo, or you need to be South Beach, or you need to be zone, or you need to be on whatever the new diet is, gluten-free. You know, if you have food allergies, if you have food sensitivities, okay, that's a different game altogether. But assuming you don't have those things, what you really just need to do is we don't do a very good job of linking what we put into our body and the way that affects the way we think and feel and perform. And if you can be aware enough to just think about when you're eating something, when you're drinking something, you know, how is this going to impact me? And like, how is this going to make me think and feel and perform and actually be okay with it? If you're going to have ice cream, don't feel like you have to have fat-free ice cream because you're on this diet. Like, have full-fat ice cream and be really happy about it, and probably just don't have it all the time because it's not going to help you think and feel and perform at your maximum. But I think to really look at it and to just have a good relationship where you're like, you know what, I'm just going to try and fuel my body. I use that all the time. I just say food is fuel.
Yeah.
Fuel your body to outperform, and do that every single day. Start with a good breakfast and you know what, put good fuel in your tank. And your car, quote unquote, or your body will right. will run really well, as will your brain, and you'll just be so much better off. But I've never, ever seen someone, and one of the things I talk about in wellness is you can't win a war with food. Yeah. And the way that we look at our, okay, I said I wouldn't use the word again, but I will. The way that we look at diets yeah. is it's the negativity of restriction versus the positivity of permission. And that negativity of restriction is you will never win the war with food saying, I can't have this, I can't have that because I'm, you know, on this diet.
The deprivation thinking really
doesn't work.
No, it really like puts you into a cycle of destruction.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely. So you use the empowering thoughts and you say, you know what can I add in? And that's why I talk about the positivity of permission. It's like you look at it and you say, you know what, I need to add in fresh fruits. I need to add in fibrous vegetables. I need to add in some more water. I need to add in lean proteins and healthy fats and complex carbohydrates. Like if you start and if you focus on adding in and you do that constantly, there's no room for the stuff that you're supposed to cut out because yeah. you've just been fueling your body with all of the stuff that you need. And it's a totally different mindset, and it's a lifestyle, and it's something that's sustainable rather than you're trying to just test your own willpower against food on what you can have and what you can't have.
Yeah. And healthy doesn't have to taste bad.
No, that's another misconception too. Yeah, it does not have to taste bad. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, this has been such a pleasure. So many nuggets here for our listeners. And I just really appreciate you openly and just sharing your knowledge with us and with the listeners and giving us some really great tips.
No problem. I was happy to be here. Thank you.
Great. All right. Well, we'll see you on the road.
Absolutely. I might be running or biking or speaking. Who knows where I'll be on that road. But yeah, you'll probably see me out there.
Good. All right. Well, take care, everybody. Thanks, Scott, for being here. Thanks, Mike Cabea, photographer, editor, engineering. Brother from another mother. See, Mike edits these. And so he said he told me that he chuckles every time I say that. So I keep saying it. So anyways, that's for Mike's benefit. All right. Thanks for tuning in today. See you next week.
Do you want to promote your business and grow in your leadership skills? Here are a few ways you can promote your business and get leadership help through We Mentor, Inc. You can be a podcast guest. Challenge yourself to share who you are on air. We'll help you out. Secondly, you can sponsor our podcast program. You can invest a small fee to have you and your company name announced at the beginning and end of one or more shows. The third way that you can promote your business and grow in your leadership skills is you can set up an individual strategy session to do work one-on-one with me, focusing on specific life and leadership issues and skills you want to acquire. Or the fourth way is you can join an entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab. These ELM labs start throughout the year. They are small groups of 5 to 9 business owners who are out to profoundly shift their lives and lead with authenticity. In 2016, I became a registered yoga instructor and mindfulness meditation teacher. I also became certified online with Brené Brown's Brave Leadership and Courage Works courses to learn an effective process of being all in, falling, getting up, and trying again. In turn, I can mentor others in how to dare greatly and rise strong. I feel better equipped to help you forge ahead in these times of great uncertainty. Our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab process is an integrated approach to leadership development. We do yoga, meditation, and leadership revolution skill setting. Yes, we will help you learn how to strengthen your body, strengthen your mind, and increase your emotional stamina as part of our leadership development process. Along with learning about real-world business planning and strategic planning, we do what works. Get involved, get started. You can reach me at 612-804-8920 or go to wementor.com and connect with us. Lastly, if you like our podcast program, help us keep it going. You can donate to our program. Just go to the wementor.com website, click on Buy button, and fill in the donation amount that you would like to contribute. We appreciate any and all contributions. See you next week.